Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting no more Peggy O's.
Hey everybody, how's it going out there? Wherever in the world you're listening, Shane Terrio here. How are you? I'm doing great, thank you for asking. If you listened to the last episode, I just asked you to resubscribe. Basically, we experienced some growing pains over here at the Riff Raff with our server. We outgrew it, so I just needed you to unsubscribe and resubscribe. Wherever you listen to Riff Raff, if it's Podbase, Stitcher, iTunes, what have you. But chances are, if you hear me now, we're in good shape and you've already done this, which I appreciate. Also appreciate your kind comments, your likes on iTunes. If you haven't done that, please do it. Helps the podcast. And I really appreciate you buying my music and also reaching out about clinics. I've gotten quite a few things about that, so we'll see if some of that stuff can happen. You're listening to a little jam with Kirk Covington from Tribal Tech that we did a few years ago called Burbank Two-Step. People always ask about the intro music, so anyway, let's get to today's special guest.
Actually, from Prairieville to play with us tonight.
From downtown Prairieville.
All right, my guest today is Mr. Dave Malone. For the past 30-plus years, Dave has been one of the guitarists, songwriters, and singers in the legendary New Orleans band, The Radiators, also known as The Rads. The Radiators have long secured their position as the quintessential New Orleans party band. I mean, they're more than just a party band, but they're definitely the top party band. If you went to school down here, maybe at Tulane or whatever, I mean, you know, they were sort of a lot of people have heard of the Radiators from that time of their life. And Dave's a great singer, a great songwriter. He's a pretty serious guitar collector, as you'll hear. So we talk about all kinds of things, where the term fishhead came from. It's their term, fishhead music for Radiator speak. A lot of now defunct clubs, where they got their start, how the drummer chopped up tables with a chainsaw. Just, you know, normal stuff. And Dave's brother, a little footnote, Dave's brother Tommy Malone was a guest on my podcast. He's another great singer, guitar player from here. And there's something in the DNA of the Malone brothers, besides the zaniness and the goofiness, which I completely indulge in. We have a good time here. The talent as well. So I think you'll enjoy this. So Dave comes over on a beautiful fall night and in New Orleans and comes up to my studio. I hand him one of my guitars. I think it's an old Gibson. And we just let the tape roll. Hope you enjoy.
You're listening to WWXYTZL49-2. 126,000 on your radio dial.
What side of the river is that on?
Oh, on the West Bank, bruh. That goes on the West Bank. West Bank.
They say K, the K, if there's a K in a radio station ID, that means it was west of the Mississippi, right? That's what it was.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, damn, I learned something from you, buddy.
So the call letter you just called, I'm on both sides. I'm straddling.
That was in Mexico somewhere.
I'm on a bridge, basically.
On a bridge. I love this, bro.
Thank you, man. You know, not many people have been up here.
Oh, that's why you were reluctant for me to come?
Yeah, I did a screening test, unbeknownst to you.
A tox report, too?
Yeah, I had you. You know, we're running. This is the podcast. We've started.
Oh, so, fuck y'all.
Alright. You want to play something first, man?
Or what do you want?
Let's play a little something. Get loose.
Alright.
You got a tune. That's some man tuners there.
I like it. It gives you that definite feeling.
Man, I like those boots. Those are almost, they had a little camouflage strip on there.
Yeah, they're rubber.
They're almost pseudo. They're much more fashionable, but they're sort of shrimp boots.
The kind. Well, if I had white shrimp boots, I was going to wear them for the podcast. Okay, where's the on-off, bro?
You don't worry about it. It'll shut off.
Oh, will it?
We can afford. I can afford the battery for it. It'll.
You got plenty.
I got plenty battery.
What you want to play? We ought to do this. So that's a toss on my little cutting cane.
Playing some of them. Look at me.
You want to try it?
I'll try it. Sure. So it goes up to D after. Okay.
It's just like a B section.
Okay. Thank you. Nice, Dave. What do you call that tune?
Cutting Cane.
Cutting Cane.
You know what I was inspired by? Did you ever hear the album, you know Merle Haggard's band, The Strangers?
Yeah, The Strangers.
Roy Nichols on guitar.
Yeah, sure.
Norm Hamlet on steel. Norm, I think that's right. But they put out an album of just them doing like country, jazz, swing.
Okay.
And they have a song called Steel and Corn, which goes... In harmony. It's crazy cool.
Wow, so that was the Bakersfield thing, right?
Yeah, so
Speedy,
check that out.
Speedy Bryan and those guys.
Steel and Corn by The Strangers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. But look, man, let me talk it to people a little bit for a sec.
Okay. Hey, yeah.
So, Dave Malone, my friend Dave, so kind to come over on this fall night.
New Orleans. How many steps I went up, Shane?
A lot. We're in an undisclosed location. My secret lair.
It's so undisclosed, I don't even know where the hell.
Nobody knows where. Yeah, not many people. This is my bat cave up here.
I love it.
Down here, up here, over here, who knows, right? But it's cool, right? It's cool.
Very, very. I love it. I'm
actually
be up here
actually a lot of people, because I'll get you to sign my door and you'll see all the people that have been up here.
Well, I'm gonna be up here a lot even when you're gone.
Well, Dave is, you know, man, let's see, how did we first meet? I don't remember. I used to see you around, but you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who Dave is. Radiators and who you out with now? I
named my current outfit Raw Oyster Cult as a joke, and it stuck.
Oh God!
It's hard to say. Man,
raw oyster cult. It is. It's the rrr.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah.
But thank you,
I asked you about this last year. We played together with Harry Shearer for his Spinal Tap, Derek Smalls, and Dave came out and kicked ass on Big Bottom, and what else did you see? A couple of Spinal Tap classics.
Heavy metal.
Heavy duty.
Heavy duty?
Yeah.
Heavy metal.
All heavy metal.
It's all heavy metal, yeah.
You sang Big Bottom because the end I got to go. The Nigel Tufnel nervous vibrato.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I was holding a bass that wasn't plugged in.
Oh, we all got to play Big Bottom on bass, that's true. But anyway... man, thank you for coming over. I've been wanting to. So basically since last year already, we talked about doing this, but you know.
I'm glad we could do it, man. going back to when we met, it was probably before you were with the Nevilles even, I guess.
I don't know. But you know, I know a little bit about you and Tommy. Well, I know a lot about you and Tommy, and you guys are from Edgar, Louisiana.
That's
definitely undisclosed location.
Yeah, one road in, one road out.
I've never been there, but it's near Luling, is that right?
No, it's between Vashery and Hornville on the west bank.
But it's close to all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Tommy...
Luling is across from... I can't remember.
Because Johnny Allen, rest his soul, he used to hang out with my cousins in Luling.
And
Tommy knew a bunch of them. Yeah, it's just a small world, man.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got all kinds of kinfolk.
In Luling?
Used to. I'm sure I still do.
I thought Raceland was...
Raceland, too? And New Orleans, yeah.
Okay.
My mom was from New Orleans and here, and Luling and all that area. My dad was from Raceland.
So Edgard's just River Road, or it was at the time. There's connecting roads that go to outlying highways, but at the time it was just River Road. And so me and Tommy listened to all kind of crazy stuff growing up. Mom always had the radio on. Dad couldn't nothing about music except he had three albums that I distinctly remember. Marty Robbins' Gunfighter Ballads and Trail Songs. Mm.
Yeah, sure.
Nighttime we'd follow me in Rose's Cantina. Music would play and funny there would whirl. One night a wild young cowboy came in. Wild as a West Texas wind. Dashing and daring. And
that's
so,
Grady Martin.
Yeah, Grady Martin.
Yeah.
And then the other one was Johnny Cash's greatest hits. Round my door, yeah. The leaves are falling. And the other one was Johnny Horton's greatest hits, which had in 1814,
Battle of New Orleans. Yeah.
So that was my dad's three albums. He probably also had a Hank Williams album because he loved Hank Williams. Mm-hmm. But my mom pointed the story in my long-winded way. She loved music. She had the radio on, and we had one of those, remember those wooden console stereos where you lift the thing up and put the record in?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I think it was either Tommy has it, in fact, a Motorola or a Magnavox or something like that. Tommy's my brother, Tommy Malone from the Subdues, by the way, who's already been on Shane's Frogcast.
We talked all about you.
So Tommy got it working again. It sounds great. So Mom not only had music on all the time, we did school plays to learn how to sing harmonies and stuff like that. And she also let us commandeer her dining room for about 3 years. We didn't eat in the dining room except for Thanksgiving. Honestly, she let us keep our gear set up.
Wow.
Amazing. But, and point being that we were exposed to all kinds of different music.
Yeah.
And we didn't, you know, I get in conversations with people all the time that I don't understand. I mean, Ray Charles is obviously soulful. Right. But I think George Jones is, too.
Sure.
Yeah. But some people don't get it.
Oh, yeah.
And we always got it.
Yeah.
We keep on getting it. We got too much. We're giving some away. We got so much of it.
Monkeys on a seesaw coming up a four-day
to do. Thank God, Mom.
Where would you buy these records at in Edgard? Where would you?
Columbia Record Club.
Okay.
Bro. Mail order.
Yeah.
Or you may have seen me with a shirt on that says "The Honey Hush, Edgard, Louisiana."
Yeah, I saw that you were wearing it for a jazz fest.
Yeah,
so I was checking.
Victoria and Leroy Bailey had a little sweet shop. They sold candy to kids to get them all hooked on sugar. And but you could order 45 records from them because that CBS Columbia, I guess, some mail order thing. Mom was in the record club, so you know you could order albums out of there. Otherwise, we had to come into New Orleans to get stuff.
Yeah,
we there was nothing in New Orleans except little kids making trouble.
Still are.
Of course, I just observed that.
You still have those kids.
But I'm really glad I had that upbringing. It was a really Huck Finn existence with the river. I have a connection with the river. And by me, I mean the Mississippi River, in case you wonder.
Yeah.
That will be in my blood forever. We used to swim in the river every day in the summer, shrimp boxes. and the old folks looked out for everybody and ratted out all the bad kids. But very lucky to have that existence.
Yeah,
but
man.
I went through there the other day, a couple of weeks ago. My mom and dad are buried there. And just to... I didn't hardly recognize. I mean, it's less there now than...
Really? I don't think I've ever been through there. I remember seeing something on online once where it was a big news story about Edgar got a new park bench installed. And I sent it to Tommy and Johnny Allen. They were laughing their ass. Yeah, that was a...
Well, where the hell is that park bench
at? I don't know, man.
We ain't got a park.
Last thing,
the whole town is a park.
I got to go through there one day.
It's you know what it is, man? If you take River Road, take the Huey P, get on River Road, or go to Booty and then go to Luling and get on River Road. That's where Luling is. I just remembered. My brain cell kicked in, Shane.
I know where that is.
And then take that upriver towards Donaldsonville.
Yeah.
You'll see like Laura Plantation, Whitney Plantation, all that. Evergreen Plantation, the one with the big, cool two staircases out front.
Yeah.
That's where our mom was born and raised. Evergreen Plantation. Wow. It's really the next little town between Edgar and Vashon, a little town called Wallace, and it is a beautiful house. So a lot of those plantations have been refurbished and now do tours, so it would be a cool thing to do.
Yeah.
But we need to go meet you and Tommy up there and act retard. Oh, I can't say that word anymore.
It's my podcast. You can say it.
I can say retarded?
Yeah.
And by that, I mean just being a big old dummy. Which we, how capable of that are we?
I'm gonna have to do a lot of editing on this, Alex. But although your brother, we had some pretty good moments on it too. I want to get to it eventually, but I want to talk about the Beatles thing.
Oh yeah,
the birthday party. I'll let you tell the story.
Yeah, it's still not funny. February 9th, seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan, that changed all of our lives, dude. It was like, first of all, the girls screaming. That looked like a good job. And they were doing their own songs, playing and singing them. And we just loved it immediately. We fell under that spell big time, bro. My mom actually kicked my dad out of the TV room because he's going in, turn that damn music down.
Wow.
And my mom kicked him out of the house.
Your mom was hip.
My mom was hip, bro. So...
So that's when something clicked in your life.
I said, this is what I want to do. I was already kind of doing it, but when I saw that you could do it like that, you know.
Man, okay, Dave's pausing to take a sip of his. How do you describe that? That's a goblet of coffee. It's huge.
It's what is this? A cauldron.
It is a cauldron. And it's about... almost 8 o'clock at night, and that's a gift. I can't drink coffee that late.
I love it.
It's really good. It's
my mom used to put coffee milk in our bottles when we were little.
Me too, man. I grew up drinking that same shit, cafe au lait, every morning.
Yeah, bro.
I wonder why my attention span would fade after. You know. Well, that, you know, you're talking about the Beatles. That's probably a good segue into one of my favorite stories.
Yeah. So September 16th, 1964. The Beatles were playing at City Park Stadium, which is still there in City Park, New Orleans. And somebody, I don't even remember who it was, got me a ticket to go to that. And I couldn't go. I was not allowed to go because September 16th is also Tommy's birthday. Mm-hmm. So instead of seeing the Beatles, I'm playing... pin the tail on a goddamn donkey. Yeah, so many years later, Tommy found a reproduction of the poster and gave it to me for my birthday and wrote in, thanks for the memories. Still got it. Yeah, but so I did not get to see
Didn't you
Beatles.
Actually buy the tickets? You had the tickets?
I didn't buy
it. Didn't buy
a friend of mine. I don't remember who it was. If it was...
They were probably like... $5 or something.
It was $5.
Really?
I saw Hendrix at City Park Stadium. It was $5.
Oh, wow.
It might have been $3.50, Shane. That's the only time when I was a kid that I waited backstage to shake somebody's hand with Jimi Hendrix. His hands were ginormous, bro.
And did you get to shake hands with him?
I did. Wow. Shook his hand. And then when I saw how big his hands were, then I knew automatically that's why he was so good.
Yeah.
Because of his big hands, not because of his talent.
No, it's big hands.
Big hands.
Yeah. That's what they say. Big hands, big feet, big talent.
There you go. That's what she said. So, yeah, what else you got? What else? What other story you got, bro?
Hey, man, I want to know, getting back to the Radiators, the Rads, one of the greatest party bands of all time, definitely in New Orleans history, for sure.
I think
so. As a matter of fact, Hall & Oates manager, his name's Jonathan Wolfson, his fraternity hired you guys to play. It was somewhere in New York, outside of New York City. He said, man, those guys were so fun. They were partying with us. It was just unbelievable. The Radiators, he kept talking about it. I was like, wow, you know the Radiators? He goes, hell yeah, we hired them to play at our party.
I'll be damned, I don't remember that in New York.
Yeah, I mean,
not
in the city, but it was maybe Rye, like, you know, outside, like Westchester, somewhere around there. Where did the term Fishheads originate? Because you call the music, it's known as like Fishhead
music. Right. Long before the band Fish.
Yeah, not Fish P.
No, just Fishhead. Yeah. Well, we have conflicting recollections on that. My recollection is that Ed, the piano player and the other singer in the band, who wrote the vast majority of the songs, I wrote with him, and then I wrote some myself, but he wrote way more than I did and sang way more than I did. He used to write for, might have been Wavelength. Do you remember that?
No.
It was like Gambit, but a weekly.
Okay.
Entertainment newspaper, or might have been monthly, like Offbeat kind of. But anyway, his pen name was Zeke Fishhead.
Oh.
So that's why I think it started being called Fishhead music.
I see.
But I'm not sure all the other guys agree with me. But we still call him Zeke. I mean, he's Ed Volker, but yeah. A lot of people call him Zeke. So it hadn't. No reference to anything that you could make sense of, but the fans latched on to it, and then everything became a bunch of fish themes. Our first album on Epic, Law of the Fish, had a beautiful gallop on a rock of a lake or something with a big fish image, and the fish skeletons and all that. I'm not really sure. I think that's where it came from.
Okay. I was reading up a little bit the other day when I knew you were coming over, and I didn't know the house band gig you had was at a pizza place in Gentilly.
Yeah, was not our first gig.
It wasn't the first gig, but it was like your residency kind of
regular gig. Wednesday nights at Luigi's on Elysian Fields near University of New Orleans. Mm-hmm. It was great. There was no stage. Barely a PA. We sat up back by the ice machine.
And this is what, late 70s?
78. We got together in January of 78. Me and Reggie were in one band. Reggie's a bass player, Reggie Scanlon. And then Ed Volker, Zeke Fishhead, and Camille Baudouin and Frank Booher, the drummer, were in another band. And Ed invited us to come jam at his garage on Waldo Drive up near the lakefront. And everybody knew immediately, okay, this is something special. Because we clicked immediately. It was crazy. So he organized a jam, another jam the next weekend. And he decided he was going to, like, test us. So he had a song called Red Dress. Do you know our song Red Dress?
I've heard it, yeah.
And he thought that if we could play that song, he knew his band he was in at the time could not play that song. So he showed us a tune and asked us, you know, to play it. And I came up with this riff.
Yeah.
And that's the riff. And then built from that, and he knew we all knew. Special things. Camille and I, the other guitar player, Camille Baudouin, from the first time we jammed, we would just play, not working it out, just play licks in harmony.
It just worked. It
that, that just happened. We were looking at each other like, what the hell was that? So something cosmic happened, dude. So,
yeah, I think I'm related to Camille. You know, my mom.
He's got people from race.
Yeah, my mom's a Baudouin. That's her maiden name.
I guarantee. You
know, I remember talking to him about it one time. He actually looks kind of like my grandfather's side of the. He might be a distant cousin or something. I mean, shit, we're all cousins.
Yeah.
Cousins from over there.
His parent from Raceland is the guy that taught him guitar the first time.
It's. I wonder what his name is, because I guarantee he's related to my grandfather.
Baudouin. Yeah, I'd for sure.
Going back to your pizza place gig, man, is it true somebody walked in there one time with a chainsaw?
Not somebody, drummer.
Yeah, the drummer. With somebody in the band.
Playing, we had a song called. Texas, Chainsaw Massacre. And it went, dang, me and Camille would do chainsaw stuff. And Ed had verses, but it was called Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And we're playing along, we're rocking out on it. And Frank kept saying, while we were playing, that he had his chainsaw out in his truck.
Oh,
I'm going to go get it. And we're going, yeah, go get it. And then he said, I don't know, I'm not going to go get it. And Camille looked it over and said, you pussy. So Frank got up from the drums while we were still playing, went out and got his chainsaw and chopped up some tables and chairs.
Oh my God.
Inside of Luigi. It was crazy. And we got fired
for
a week until they figured out the lost revenue from us not playing there.
And the exposure, man, the talk of the town. Dude walked in with a chainsaw, cranked it up.
Yeah, it was crazy. A lot of crazy things have happened. Luigi's was great, though, Shane, because our fans from day one, they didn't care what we did so long as it looked like we were just trying stuff. So that was our rehearsals, too. Luigi's was our rehearsals. We could work stuff out, and anything we did was fine with them. It was really great. Really one of the many, many fortunate things that happened with this band. For instance, you're talking about New York. The first time we played at the Lone Star, the old Lone Star, 13th Street and 5th Avenue, we went up there, and there was a line around the block, and we're going, what the hell's going on? We'd never played there before. Well, we did play there once with Earl King. I'll tell you about that later. Well, as it turns out, without Earl King.
Oh, I want to hear this. Yeah.
So a line down the block, and it turns out that this was a couple of years after being together, but we always allowed the kids to tape our gigs on cassette tapes, mm-hmm. and the people that were into that were way into it. You know, fancy mics on Nakamichi or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'd go to an area, and the older siblings had gone back home, and the younger siblings would be going to Tulane, and they already knew our songs. But wherever we went to these hometowns of these Tulane kids, we already had a fan club and didn't even know it. It was really, we call it brilliantly, a brilliant accident, having that. Hey, just having tapes, that was real grassroots stuff, man.
Yep.
So
that's the Grateful Dead type thing.
Yeah,
that's
really, very much.
Yeah, but you weren't, you weren't even probably conscious of that. It was just, you were just, it was just a natural thing. Yeah.
No, tape. I mean, we found out later, you know, we played at the MOM Mom's Ball the Saturday before Fat Tuesday every year. Often got asked to not come back.
Because I want to talk about the Mom's Ball. That's a whole other thing. Yeah.
But then other crews, and by people, by crew, I mean K-R-E-W-E, which is a Mardi Gras organization that arranges Mardi Gras balls, Mardi Gras parties, Mardi Gras parades, and general Mardi Gras shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
So Crew of Dads, where I'm going next weekend, was at Minneapolis. They still do it.
They kind of copied the original Mom's Ball format. And
all over the country. There was like 8 or 9 or 10. So,
but the Radiators were like became the official band for all the Mom's.
Of the different crews, no matter what city it was in.
Right.
But it all started with Luigi's. But our first gig ever was actually at Jimmy Ford, the drummer?
No.
He had Ford's place near Tipitina somewhere. And this was, I think, before when Tipitina's was still a 501 club, and that was our first gig, I think. Anyway, I forgot what the hell you asked me.
well, we kind of went into Mom's Ball, but we were talking about the pizza place and then how it spread.
Yeah. Well, it was Luigi's. Wesley Schmidt, who just passed away recently, was the manager of Snug Harbor afterwards.
Right, okay, yeah.
And then those people, Alan and Deborah Langhoff, of the block away, had, I don't know what it's called now, but it used to be the Dream Palace. And we were like the house band there, too. So we had the Dream Palace and Luigi's, and then eventually Jimmy's, Tipitina's, Jed's. Maple Leaf. That's about it, I guess. And then Tulane, we played at Tulane a whole lot. In fact, kids used to joke about freshmen had to take Radiator 101, which I thought was cute. And thank God for it.
Well, because people would graduate from Tulane and then go to wherever part of the country and start work, and they would remember the Radiators and the Neville Brothers. I would hear about this all the time.
You know? And rave about how much fun it was.
Yeah, and they sort of spread.
You can't even get into trouble in that town.
It's hard. Right. It's hard. But once you do,
you know you did it right.
Yeah. But the Mom's Ball, Mystic Orphans and
Misfits.
Misfits.
Yeah.
That's the name of the crew, right?
Yeah.
And the Radiators began. I mean, that's still a big deal, man. The Mom's Ball.
I don't know what it is anymore.
People come in from all over.
It's changed. We did it for, 35 years or something. And there's always a theme, and Ed always wrote a song for the theme.
Wow.
We took it really seriously, and it was, for a long time at the DAV Hall in Araby on Frisco Street, I think. And then it turned over to Blaine Kern's Mardi Gras World across the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it got so huge. And they were serious. They wouldn't let anybody in, famous or what, if they didn't look like they put an effort into trying to costume. Because everybody was kind of put out that costuming had kind of gone away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that when I remember Mardi Gras when I was a kid, everybody was dressed up like something, you know? And then it got to be just kids and t-shirts and jeans. It's lost its whatever. I segue a lot, yeah.
I see people ride down the street in costumes in the middle of the week, and it's not Mardi Gras here. There used to be a guy dressed like Abraham Lincoln. He would be in, and I mean, I would see him all the time, and I figured out he was a magician. But he happened to look exact. I mean, it was a, he looked dead
the
on.
The beard?
Yeah, everything. And he would be in costume and walk to the quarter from here, from uptown, you know?
Jeez, that's...
Middle of the summer.
You need to be a magician to do
that.
Yeah,
yeah. That's not a very magical gig.
So but, I keep interrupting you, man. So just shut
no,
me
no,
up.
No, no, I'm interrupting you, but I'm looking at my... I have a little cheat sheet here.
All right, hit me, so to speak.
Man, I just remember the first time we met now. It was at WWOZ.
Mm-hmm.
Leo Nocentelli had this little guitar.
That's the first
clinic.
Time we met?
Yeah, we maybe not met, but we played together. It was you and I and Brian Stoltz and Leo.
And Jeff from
and the guy
Galactic.
From Galactic, Jeff. And we, yeah.
We all had the Nocentelli
I just t-shirts. Got rid of that T-shirt. I had that T-shirt for 20 years.
I still got mine somewhere.
I had
bro.
It somewhere, but it was like a, you know, XXXXL.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the one they gave me.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fine for me, bro. I'm a big boy.
Yeah, I remember
you
that.
You look like a male model. You're all
yeah,
smelt
right.
and shit.
Not anymore. But Svelte?
What is Svelte.
That? Let me look at that. Hold on. Let's take a break. But anyway, that's the first time we met. I remember now.
Yeah. That was after the Neville Brothers.
No, I was during.
During?
Yeah, I was doing the gig then.
We met before then, but didn't hang out. Because I met
yeah,
you
I
at
met
a
you
Neville
probably
Brothers
through
gig,
Willie
I'm sure.
Green. I probably went to a Monkey Ranch gig or something. Yeah,
oh,
or
Lord.
Something.
At Benny's?
Probably.
Oh, Lord. I'm getting
Teresa and
Ooh-wee. That was good band.
Yeah.
Anders Osborne.
Willie.
Tommy was in that for a while, Reggie, Willie Green, mm-hmm. Glenn Hartman, I don't know who else. Your tape's running out, bro?
No, man. I got a lot of tape. It comes on this little card. I don't know how they fit all that tape in there, but...
Magic.
Man, you have some nice guitars.
I do.
Let's talk about guitars for a second.
Okay.
You have a really nice guitar. Of course, you brought one tonight. Were you going to give me that? Is that why you brought that one?
I was going to give you that, but now that I've seen this, I could trade you, but my wife would kill me, so then you'd get this back anyway. No, my wife gave me that.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Gretsch White
It's
Falcon.
An early 90s Gretsch White Falcon with the wide body. I keep banging my watch on here, but I promise you I'm not messing it up.
Okay. It's not a metal watch anyway.
Yeah, it's a big, giant... yeah, that's a Gretsch White Falcon. I, being the Beatle maniac that I am, I have a 63 Country Gentleman. I had a 63 Tennessean till 2 weeks ago when I gave it to Tommy for his birthday.
Wow.
Because, yeah, he, that was his first, my first band in New Orleans was called Dust Woofie, and the other guitar player, John Hidalgo, who also played pedal steel, that Gretsch Tennessean was his, and Tommy bought it from him. And I don't know what happened to that thing. Tommy, it got gone at some point, and he's been regretting, you know, guitar regret. So I gave him my 63, just like George Harrison's. And then I've got a Gretsch Duo Jet. I've got a...
Got some nice Strats.
Yeah, I have five or six Strats. I don't have old ones anymore because I really like the early 80s when they first started doing the reissues of the 57 Maple Neck and the 62 Rosewood Neck. You can't make a better guitar.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, people would argue that like that.
Well, our dear friend, we should... Take a second, since we're talking about guitars. That's one of my Milan songs, and Gerard, who was a dear friend of mine, man, I'm so still bummed out about it. He died a couple, not even a week ago.
Yeah,
and
he was
a friend of yours, and Tommy, yeah.
I hadn't talked to him in a long time. I had a Milan song telly, but it was just a standard two-pickup telly type thing. One of the guitars that got stolen when the Rad's equipment truck got stolen. I never got it back. Mm. And Tommy had a Milasa. I don't know if he still does, but let me tell you something, people. His guitar is Gerard Milasa, and that's spelled M-E-L-A-N-C-O-N.
Yep.
Fantastic guitar.
John Oates just bought one.
Oh, really?
I introduced him to Gerard, so John Oates bought one, and Jim and my friend John Harrington from Steely Dan got one. It's his main guitar now.
No
Oates,
kidding.
The one Oates got is like, man, when Gerard, he was at the top of his game, man. I mean, his guitars he was building now were just unbelievable.
Really?
So it's a shame. I mean, I look them up online, and I mean, they hold their value. They're not cheap instruments. But wow. He could have been. Did you ever go out to his shop in Thibodaux?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little cinder block shop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little town, and he could have been really big, like Paul Reed Smith or something.
Yeah.
He didn't want to do it. You know, he was a real. He just wanted to keep it really small, and he didn't want to. You know, he was a.
But he took the craft and the care and, you know, tweaking every little thing till it was perfect. Yeah. I mean, his guitars are...
I always said, you know, I like playing because I get people approach me a lot wanting me to play their guitars. And I always like Gerard's guitars. Not only are they great instruments, you know, they're obviously great guitars.
Beautiful,
too. There are a lot of great guitars out there, but that one, it's like... It's like holding a piece of home in your hand. You know,
absolutely.
When you're on tour, you're like, yeah, it's my. I could drive out there to him an hour away from here and have him adjust stuff and hang out and shoot the shit and have lunch. And now he's gone. Man.
Oh, that's a drag. But, plus, his finishes are really
And he was cool. Very well respected, man. I would be at the shop, you know, and he was buddies with Sadowski and, you know, John Sir and PRS. I mean, all the big time people. He was buddies with him. And he was a respected guy. You know, he was a really. Anyway.
I'm really kind of bummed at myself for not staying in touch with him. I just you know, things go way out of your immediate, you know, cycle.
Well, you're still on his website.
Oh, good.
You're in town.
That green, that dark green telly he made for me with the ivory trim.
Well, if anybody ever sees that.
Well, yeah.
That was stolen out of, with probably a lot of stuff.
I thought that kind of thing would turn up. I mean, I have the serial number somewhere still.
Well, I can, if you want to give it to me later, I do like a little page, like with the bio.
Oh, I will give you, I got the sheet of all my stolen stuff, because I had a couple of the first two Buddha amps when Jeff Bober was making everything before they farmed stuff out or whatever, and they sounded so damn good, and I played a few later, and they sounded okay, but it...
Not like the first one.
Didn't seem to have the same mojo. Maybe I'm kidding myself, but it doesn't matter if you're kidding yourself. What you think is right is right.
Sure.
But, yeah, Gerard, R.I.P., buddy.
Yeah.
So I this thing with me and guitars started in 1968, and I've been very careful about it because I don't want to spend an arm and a leg on something, and I don't want something that's so perfect that you don't want to play it. I don't like that. I mean, I get it. I get, you know, if it's for collecting, hanging on the wall because it's an investment, I get it.
Right.
But I'd rather play the damn thing. So in 1968, the rhythm guitar player in my band in Edgard called The Family Dog, the rhythm guitar player Tim Pater was going to school at DelSalle here in town. And I had a Duosonic and couldn't understand why it didn't sound like Hendrix. And it's those, remember those crappy little molded pickups?
I don't.
Do you remember Fender Duosonic three-quarter size?
I don't.
I mean,
was
it
like a Mustang? Kind of like a Mustang or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
A step down from a Mustang.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, dude. Anyway, Tim Pato found in the want ads of the Sometimes Picayune. We'll explain that later. A lady was selling a Fender Telecaster guitar, $100. And Tim called her, and I didn't even see it. He called me up and said, well, what do you think? I said, well, go check it out. If it looks good, we should get it. Because he wanted me to have a better guitar, and I definitely wanted me to have a better guitar. And he checked it out, and he said it seemed, I mean, he wasn't knowledgeable about guitar. None of us were. We didn't know anything about stuff. This wasn't a vintage guitar then. This was just a... So this was 1968. So it was a 12-year-old Telecaster. It was kind of beat up. He talked it down from $100. I got it for $80.
Wow.
And I still have it. That's my main Tele, wow. 56 Telecaster.
Oh, man.
You can rarely find a 56 Telecaster for $80 anymore. Rarely, Shane.
I've never heard of it.
So I still have that one. That one stays home. And then I just started, you know, looking for stuff and buying something at a good price, going on eBay at 2 a.m. and, you know, asking all a million questions and looking at the pictures carefully and offering way below what they wanted. If I got it, fine. If I didn't, I didn't lose nothing. Mm-hmm. If I got it and I loved it, I kept it. If I got it and I just kind of liked it, I sold it for a profit. So it became that. So now I have about 40 guitars. That
wow.
I love every one of them, you know.
That's a nice collection.
Man. Yeah. Well, I gave Tommy one, so I guess I got 39. But I got cool stuff. I have a 61 Gibson Birdland. I have a 61 Cherry Red ES-330. I have a 61 Epiphone Casino with the big headstock that just sings. I have a 1926 Martin 0018, which, am I rambling on too much?
No, I
didn't. The story behind that one was we were going out on tour, and we were going out to meet up with the tour bus, and my wife, Beth, at the time told me that don't come home with any more guitars. Not because she didn't understand why I loved them so much, but we just didn't have room for them. And she was right. So I said, okay, I don't think I said I promise, or maybe I had my fingers crossed. but we went out on tour. We're up somewhere in Maine or Vermont or somewhere up there. And it just so happened that right next door to probably a Holiday Inn or something, was a little pawn store / music shop. And I always go in those places. It don't do you no good no more because everybody knows what everything's worth now.
Yeah.
So I walked in and I'm looking around and I see this little Martin. And you could tell it's had some like this kind of thing going on. But it had been cleated with wooden cleats, fixed reasonably well. And the guy recognized me, oddly enough, wherever the hell we were. And I said, can I see that Martin? And I didn't know that they had such a V-neck. You ever played a 20s Martin?
I don't have a 20s, but I have a 50s one. It has kind of a V-neck.
This is a real V.
Yeah.
And so I picked it up and I just went, only it was like 10 times louder and ringing. I went, holy shit. And I played it for a while and it played flat. Had the frets that are, what are they called? The flat. The ones that are pounded in.
Okay.
I
don't know.
I had to send it back to Martin and Clarence, the last guy at Fender, is still working on those bar frets, I guess. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Somebody out there right now is screaming, how can you not know that?
How can you not know that?
Host a podcast.
I used to know that. My memory went south. So I played this thing and I was like, oh my God. So I told the guy to hang on. I ran back to the hotel and got Reggie, because he and I hung around all the time, because just we did. And I said, dude, come with me. You got to hear this little acoustic guitar. Because I can't listen to it while I'm playing it, but I wanted to know what he thought. And I just played a run and a couple of chords and stuff, and he went, holy cow. And he just said it was the best sound acoustic he'd ever heard, and he's probably bullshitting, but it really rich and everything balanced. So it was on consignment and the guy wanted some amount for it, and I said, look, we're staying at the hotel next door. If I'll offer this, because that's what I was going to do. I wasn't going to pay for it. I didn't need it. Right. I wanted it, but I didn't need it. And it had the old brown fake alligator chipboard case, which I still have.
Yeah.
And offered an amount that I don't recall right now. I think it was $800.
$80?
No.
It's always a magic number.
I think it was $800, but, which was a lot less than he was asking for. And I don't even know if I should be saying this over the air. Who cares? This was 20 years ago.
I don't think they, yeah.
And the guy called me at the hotel and said the guy needed the money. Come get it. So I did. got it back on into the hotel, and I'm playing it in the room. Reggie says, "So what you gonna tell Beth?" I went, "Oh shit!" So I called her up and I said, "Babe, I got you a present."
Oh, a bowling ball. I mean, guitar.
I wouldn't tell her what it was. So she still calls that Martin her guitar. So that's my oldest guitar, 1926 Martin. Man, I have a 19. I like 60, 61, and 62 Gibsons for some reason. I don't know why. Something about them. They just always feel right to me. I have a 61 J50. I have a 65 J160E. I have a 65 Hofner Beetle bass. Wow. I have a early 60s Vox AC10 amp, Vox AC50.
Why don't you tell everybody where you keep this stuff?
Okay, the combination to the...
no, that's a serious collection, man.
No, I ain't even started yet, but I'm running out of steam here. No, I got cool stuff, but I really love them all. I got...
Yeah.
Three pickup white SG.
I remember that SG.
I got
you let me take it home last year.
Yeah. I got a two pickup Cherry SG. I just think those are really beautiful and they're cool.
Yeah.
Got a couple of handmade guitars this guy made for me. Trip Tiedemann. A chambered sort of Les Paul with, I think, Lahler pickups. And he made me a gold metal flake Buck Owens Telly that just sounds phenomenal. And way more that I can't remember. Anyway, I went off on that.
Wow, that's...
You got to come to the country, bro.
I need to see
my stuff. I got like five Tweed amps. I got three or four Brown Fender amps.
Wow.
I got the Brown Fender Vibolux that I was playing when the Rads got together.
Wow.
Still got it.
I should have went out to you and done this interview.
Yeah, we should have.
Let's just start over.
And it's only three steps up to my house.
Man, I got to keep this shit like a fortress out here, you know?
Dude, ain't nobody ripping off your shit, that's for sure.
No.
Can you say shit on this podcast?
Yeah, you can.
What else can you say?
You can say anything you want, dude.
All right, I'm going to let you be.
You
have to be the voice of reason, Shane.
No, I'm the wrong person for that. As much as I want to clown, because I know we could, I'm honestly, sincerely interested in asking you some serious questions, which I never do until we get together.
Fine.
I want to ask you about, you don't have to talk about it a lot, but I know you were around, man, during the Warehouse. The Warehouse was a club a stone's throw from here. It was a
Felicity
Warehouse.
And Chopatoulas.
Yeah, well, more than a stone's throw from here, but...
two stones.
Yeah. But man, what's some of the coolest bands you saw at the Warehouse? I'm just being
things that I didn't think were gonna knock me on my butt. Poco was great. You know, this is crazy to admit, but I never saw the Allman Brothers there, and they played there a million times. I just never went.
New Year's, they were like the house band for days,
more than
right?
that, though. Yeah. They played there all the time, and I never went. I was broke all the time too, even though it was like only $250 to get in or something. But weird stuff like Procol Harum blew me away. I didn't expect to love them so much.
ZZ Top recorded the live part of Fandango.
Yeah.
I talked to Billy Gibbons about it. You know, you remember hanging in the rafters with Dwayne Allman, smoking weed and crazy shit. And I just, that was before
my
time.
Wait, do you miss that?
Yeah, that was before my time. But
But
I heard about it. My uncle used to go there. He told me all kinds of crazy stories. They
give
you a scrap of carpet, and that was your seat and your ticket to get in. When I drive by there, I can't imagine the history that is on that empty lot now since they tore the building.
I don't know why they did that.
I heard the bricks, some of the bricks are in the, what's the bar on Magazine down by La Bonta in the back bar? The bricks on the floor are from the Warehouse.
Oh, wow. I went there a lot, and I was in altered states most of the time. That's all I'll say about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I saw so many good things. I can't remember, dude.
But like, just for people listening, I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because this is your thing. But I just know that, what was it? Black Sabbath played there with Ozzy.
Yeah.
I mean, the Doors did their last concert there.
Last show.
Yeah. That's where Grateful Dead got busted the next day.
That's right.
They played there, and the trucking busted it in New Orleans.
There was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of stuff like whatever, blues rock, British blues rock, Humble Pie and Wishbone
Fleetwood Mac,
Ash.
The original Fleetwood Mac with Peter Green.
Yeah, with Peter Green, which I also didn't see. I missed a lot of good opportunities. Just because we had a lot of birthday parties. Yeah, right. No, we were just in the basement making music. We didn't go out a whole lot. Nobody had a lot of money, and I went as often as I could.
I was just curious.
I don't remember this carpet getting you in free thing, though.
No, it wasn't free. You'd pay, and they gave you a scrap of carpet, and that showed that you had paid. And then you would sit down on the dirt or whatever it was.
God, I don't remember that either, Shane.
My uncle said he saw Elton John there once, and Elton John came out, and it was, you know, hot as shit, whatever, New Orleans, pouring out raining, roof leaking. Yeah. And he was literally an empty warehouse.
Yeah.
And Elton John came out, and he was just furious, you know, and then water was like dripping on the piano, and he stood up, he goes, he not only didn't he play, but he goes, I will never perform in this town again. And it took years, not until the 2000s did he play at the arena.
Oh, I never heard that.
Yeah.
Wow. It was nasty, man. It was nasty. People were burning joints everywhere and doing God knows what, drinking Boone's Farm and vomiting. And his old, they had little dudes where when you'd go to park, they'd ask you for a couple of bucks to watch your car. Well, if you didn't give them a couple of bucks, something was going to happen to your car.
Wow.
But, yeah, that's partly why I didn't go there, because it was terrible funny. Neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I'd been warned. You know, I'm from Edgard. What the hell do I know? I was real freaked out about bad, dangerous neighborhoods because I hadn't been around that kind of shit. But I missed out on a lot. That was that Beaver Productions. That was a very important thing for music in New Orleans, big time.
They made a documentary about the warehouse, and what was the guy's name? Bill Johnson. I got to meet him a few times. Unfortunately, he passed away a while back. But they made a documentary about it. It's really good. They couldn't use the real music because of licensing. It cost a fortune, so they had to replicate some of the music for the documentary, you know, of all the famous
Who
bands.
Owns the recordings?
I mean, they couldn't afford to pay the original artist to use some of the... You know,
I'm surprised most of them didn't just let them do it.
They were
only going to use like 20 seconds anyway.
Yeah, I know.
If I didn't know better, I'd swear some people are assholes. Edit that out.
You want to play something else, man? Then I'll probably have enough. I'll let you get out of here.
We'll finish asking you questions.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean,
I don't want to be the only dud on your podcast, bro.
Dude, what are you talking about? This is a winner already. I'm going to have to do minimal editing to this.
All right, play
the dud on the podcast. Shit.
A sort of a
dude on the podcast. Thelonious Monk, Dave Malone style.
Yeah, that's right. I always wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Got anything good?
Yeah, I got a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
Let me press record and we'll do it for real now.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go ahead and put one down.
No, man, I got great stuff. Thank you.
This thing, the more you play it, the more it's likey-like.
Man, one more thing I forgot to ask you about. Tell me about the Last Waltz tour.
Well, in 2017...
Because you're about to go out again.
I'm going out on the... third, to go up to Portchester to rehearse in
it's a theater up there, right?
Yeah, Portchester. Went blank on it.
Yeah, that's what's it called? I don't remember.
In the Capitol?
The Capitol Theater.
Capitol Theater in Portchester. In 2017, we did during Jazz Fest. A Last Waltz thing. Don Was and Warren Haynes are the band leaders, and Jamie Johnson. So Warren and Jamie sing most things. John Modesty on keyboards, Terrence Higgins on bass, Bob Margolin from the original Last Waltz, myself, Cyril Neville, Mark Mullins and the Levy Horns.
Oh, nice.
You know Mark?
Sure.
So it's Mark and I just went blank on people's names. It's so terrible. Bobby Campo from...
Oh, Bobby's out? Yeah, I know Bobby.
On trumpet. Yeah. Wade, somebody, Smith on sax. They're the Levy Horns. But now, so we did it during Jazz Fest, and then so we did a whole tour all over the whole country. And we added Garth Hudson, which was phenomenal.
Wow.
Taj Mahal. Michael McDonald, who's just ridiculous. I mean, you're just talking to him. He just sounds like stuff. And then he opens his mouth and that voice comes out. Yeah. And it's like, holy
nice
shit.
Guy, right?
Really, nice really guy. Sweet guy, yeah. You take this before I steal it. Because I love that sumbitch.
That's my 50. He's playing my 52 Gibson J45, which I love this guitar too, man.
It's really great. What is that on there? 12s?
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, Well, that's cool, man. You're going out with Dylan again.
Yeah, I'm doing that. We're doing 14 shows in November, I think. Ended up in Nashville, where there'll also be Robbie Robson, which he's never done one of these.
Wow, that's epic, man.
Yeah, Emmy Lou Harris, Vince Gill, who's wow. a monster, and other people that I'm
Wow, that's
going to
be a lot of fun.
Oh, dude. You know, I'm just featured on like three or four songs and sing harmonies on some other stuff. But it's just such a good band.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like
it's crazy. Don was on bass, of course. Yeah. And, well, when we did it before, Mac was still around. So Dr.
that.
John was on it, too.
I remember that.
And who am I forgetting? Jimmy Vivino came out for a few.
Dave, thank you, bro, for coming over and spending your Thursday night with me.
Wait, it's Thursday? Oh, shit, I can't be here.
Well, you're here now. I got an hour and 25 minutes of you on here.
Am I still here right now?
I'm still here right now.
Oh, shit. Yeah, this was fun, man.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to say anything?
No, I was just going to say thank you.
Thanks for having me, Shane. Well, being had by you has been one of the highlights of my life. And thanks, really, really, from the bottom of my heart or somewhere, Sal. Thanks for that 52 Gibson.
You're welcome, man. I figure you hate.
Because I'm a 52 model myself, bro.
It might be time to re-glue your braces.
Definitely.
After 50 years.
You know when my birthday is, huh? No. The day Katrina ate New Orleans, August 29th.
Are you serious?
That's my birthday, buddy. Aren't I lucky? I am very lucky, very fortunate. Anyway, let me get my ass out of
You're
here.
You're still here, bro. You still got coffee left, too. All right.
All right.
Thanks, Dave.
No, man. You ain't got to thank me. I love it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.